Halo 3 is coming, and Walmart is the fastest way to play. Gather your crew and head to Walmart when Halo 3 goes on sale at 12:01 a.m. on September 25th. With checkout lanes just for Halo 3, plenty of copies in stock, and Halo 3 dog tags while supplies last. Visit walmart.com/Halo3 to customize your mission for obtaining Halo 3 and pass the word to your squad.
Hello and welcome to GFW Radio. It is September 25th, 2007. I'm lying. It's the 24th when we're recording it. You are listening to it on the 25th because that's the kind of magic we work here. And I am here with the GFW crew, all minus one. But those who are here are as follows.
Darren Gladstone.
Sean Elliott.
And Sean Malloy.
And poor Ryan Scott, he's here, he's sitting at his desk, but he's all sniffly. And he didn't want to come to the mic because he was worried that his sniffly voice was going to...
Someone's got to say
his excuse?
What does a sick Ryan Scott sound like?
Is that like...
Yeah. You know what, I was thinking it, wasn't going to say it.
But he did write a letter that he wanted me to read before we started here. And it goes, Dear Adoring Fan. And then he's got S in parentheses. Greetings and salutations. That's not nice. I won't do
it. hell no.
I've decided to mercifully spare you all from the horrid sounds of my sniffling and sneezing.
Whoa.
So you'll just have
the
to
horrid
find...
fucking sounds. There,
sorry.
There's some convergence.
Yeah.
Darren just took a sip of backwash in the microphone.
Sorry.
So you'll have to find some way to get through this week's podcast without my usual helping of long-winded input. I see what he did there. Here are a couple of thoughts to keep you going until next week. One, Team Fortress 2 is fun for a shooter. Also, if you see a guy named Rydog playing, please don't kill me. Two, Halo 3 sucks. Yours in, and then he has the word Christ crossed out, and then Cthulhu. So yours in Cthulhu.
Wow.
Ryan.
Wow.
Okay.
Ryan Cthulhu.
So, yeah. That's Ryan Scott for this week, folks. Send your hate mail to him if you have any religious issues.
And if you're Rydog, and if you see Rydog online, shoot him.
And shoot him, yeah. So, yeah, here we are. It's Halo 3 Eve. We'll talk about that a little bit here. I guess it'll be Halo Day by the time everybody plays it or listens to this, I mean. We've all been playing other things. I think Darren's been playing a little Halo 3 so far. What else do we have to talk about other than those?
A lot of games.
We've got a lot of Orange Box stuff we're going to get into.
Fortress Forever.
This is prime time.
About.
Fortress Forever. Yep. We've got a lot on our plate. Mm-hmm. Now, also, we have Heroes tonight.
Oh, Heroes is our premiere.
But I'm going to put in a little public service announcement before we go. Here's the educational part of the podcast. Did any of you guys watch the Ken Burns thing yet? Are you planning on it?
No.
You have a TiVo? No?
I don't actually know what you're talking about.
Oh, the war?
The war.
Oh, the war. Okay.
Yeah.
I canceled my cable, so you need to TiVo it for me.
It's PBS, man. It's Channel 9.
Yeah, but I don't even have – I don't get even the free channels.
You don't?
No.
Wow.
Well, yeah, you have crap reception. Is that the deal?
Yeah, it's just – it's
you're like living without TV?
Yeah,
dude,
he survived.
Time before that, I went. I think about 8 or 9 years from the time I was an undergrad through a couple years after.
That's why, like, you've read all those books and stuff.
Well, yeah, and played so many games. Between books and games, between reading and gaming, there's just not so much time for.
Well, you can watch stuff online now.
You missed all that pop culture, though.
But I will be. I'm fine for when Lost comes out. I can watch it online. Battlestar is going to be an
issue. So you missed like 9 years of TV. So if we make like Saved by the Bell jokes and stuff, you'll just be going, huh?
Nah, that's the wrong time frame.
Screech who?
I missed it in the hot era when it was like just when Linkin Park and Limp Bizkit and all the shit ass bands were like blowing up and the whole Carson Daly thing. Yeah. So like I'd hear about all that, but
that shit doesn't mean anything to me either.
Yeah, and I think I'm better off without it.
I think you probably are. But Ken Burns, The War. Is quite good. I only watched the first part, and just made me think while I was watching it. Not to start off in a kind of old man dad sort of way, but it did make me think. Boy, I've been playing a lot of World War II games. Oh, that's something else we're going to talk about today.
Let's go right into
We'll make that transition. Yeah, but I was thinking, you know, there's probably a lot of people out there, a lot of kids out there who are playing these games and really don't have much context. And history class here in the U.S. can be pretty fucking boring and bad. A lot of bad history teachers, and Ken, a lot of great ones too. And I salute you. But Ken Burns does a really nice job, at least so far, in giving World War II a really a digestible context in which to learn about it. So I recommend it.
Interesting. I'll have.
There you go.
I'm sure I'd like to talk about it once I get the chance to see it. Yeah. On that World War II note,
yeah.
Some time ago, we made a point of saying that where video game reviews are concerned, anytime a writer is going to say something about a World War II first-person shooter, they begin their review in exactly the same way. So what we did is we just went at, you know, near random. I just searched for reviews for various, you know, reviews of World War II, of games that are, you know, World War II franchises. And we read from tons. You know, they were on every website and every magazine.
That was like 4 or 5 months ago, maybe.
Sounds about right.
It was quite some time ago. Yeah. So, you know, if you started listening since then, that's the gist of it. And I just want to continue to track this until I see this like wretched trend eradicated from the business.
So a one man crusade, a one magazine crusade.
Yeah. So here we go from GamePro's review of Medal of Honor Airborne. And again, nothing against the magazines and the people involved here. This is just like I'm challenging you to find some other way to write an intro for a review for a World War II FPS. So we have. Okay, I know what you're thinking. Not another World War II themed shooter. But don't let go of your M1 Garands just yet, as Medal of Honor Airborne has enough new ideas to make you reconsider. Now switching over to, what do we have here? PC Gamer, review of Medal of Honor Airborne. Begins, it's unfortunate that World War II is such an overplayed game setting. I've played through the battles fought by the greatest generation so many times that every new derivative World War II shooter seems to diminish its incredible sacrifice. Fortunately, Airborne's excellent new parachuting mechanic takes Nazi smashing to a new place, up. So, the thing that I'm pointing out there, you know, to repeat myself now, since this is nothing more than just a place to put repeating ourselves under a microscope. and it's just that... That intro was more played out than a World War II FPS, of course, and it continues to be. But then the real thing that's hilarious is that they all have that twist at the end. Okay, you're sick of these, but I'm going to pick this motherfucking one.
Yeah,
you know, like, and there's no, it doesn't matter what it is. It could be any game. The outfit, right. You know, by Relic for console. It
right.
really doesn't matter. Take a look.
Right.
And find if it's a preview. Sometimes in a review they might flop and say, well, yeah, this is that derivative one. In 100% of previews, though, just look around in the
right.
enthusiast press. They've all got that twist.
Yeah, that is a great thing because it's like for every World War II game of the past 2 years, they've all sucked except for this one in this article right now.
And if you're bored, a bored listener, maybe you got a desk job and the manager's not watching you, try to compile like a master list of every. I mean, you'll obviously be able to look at online stuff, but if you also subscribe to magazines, try to compile a master list. Like that would be rad to have in one place. Or we can just look and read that thing over and over again. And
it's time for a new lead there, I think.
Yeah.
And it's weird because we had this problem even before I was at this magazine. Like,
oh, yeah.
We would point this out in other magazines and go, ah, ha, ha, here it is again.
Yeah.
It's like it's been going on for
endless
eons.
Yeah.
Since World War II.
And, you know, We're pointing fingers like we like to do here.
Right. Yeah, well, this is a very specific thing
yes,
that we're
specific.
Pointing at. Like I said, we're not saying, yeah, these guys suck, these guys are idiots or bad, but we're saying that it's like, hey, you can even have a friend and he does some annoying thing. Like
uh-huh.
He's like burping all the time and it smells like raw ass. Like you could tell him, like, dude, your breath smells like shit, but he's still your friend.
Uh-huh.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so you can chill out on that intro.
That's hard to do, though, to tell a friend that.
It is. But I just did it.
It's like the guy who smelled really bad here at the office.
Yeah.
You know what I'm talking about?
I don't know about that, and I'm going to interrupt you before you tell
Not
that
me,
story.
No, it wasn't you.
There's the classic guy who he used to wear shorts, and his ball sack would hang out of his shorts, and they had to tell him to put his nut away. Like, the HR department had to.
Here?
Yes.
What?
Before I worked here, though,
wow.
I heard all this from the
this
EGM guys. And they had to tell, yeah, the HR department, they had to get them to put his nut away. And then he said to start wearing pants. That's a true story.
I think I remember that one.
I haven't confirmed
it. Did he wear boxers or what?
I don't know. Something was up, clearly.
Okay. That's better than my story.
What's this guy smell?
No, it was just somebody who like smelled so bad. It wasn't on our side of the building. It was in the sales department, which is a really bad thing. You don't want a stinky salesman, you know?
Yeah, sealing the deals is bad.
But he smelled so bad that, you know, and nobody had the nerve to do anything, you know, and it was the old, like, they had to, like, put a note in his mailbox, you know, dear whoever, yeah, there you stink, love anonymous.
One of the safe Safeway night friends I worked on, the whole night crew was basically like a circus sideshow, but the one of the dudes, no, we had nicknames for all of them, and, like, one of them was... Well, there's Child Shoe, which I got to point out because he had like a size 4 shoe or something. I don't know why. We call him CS though, so he never knew. And then, but this other fool, he smelled just like you're saying, like, you know, like an outhouse with feet. Like, you'd have to start, like, he'd have to go face an aisle with that guy.
Yeah.
Did you have a fake?
Yeah, this guy, the sales guy really stunk. I mean, when I would be in a meeting with him, I would have to just, like, you know, breathe through my mouth just so I wouldn't inhale the BO through my nose. You know, it would just be like that. please get out. And when I was a kid, my dad actually, he worked at a bank for a long time, but then he was self-employed in real estate, and he shared the office with these two other guys, and he would come home at night, and he would talk about the guys he worked with, and one of them, and my dad has nicknames for everybody, so one guy was Captain Crunch because he looked like the guy on the box, but the other guy was Pitts, and I thought, like, that was the guy's name, you know, Randy Pitts or whatever. It's because the guy stunk. Because it was armpits.
Did you call him that to his face one time?
Oh, yo, hi, Mr. Pitts.
What?
Excuse me? Yeah, I hope I didn't do that. What are we talking about?
We had to get way off topic.
Why don't we just jump right into Team Fortress since we've all been
playing? Yeah, let's do that. Even Ryan was playing Team Fortress too.
Holy crap.
That's right. He was a medic.
That's how good it is.
He's quote unquote sick. He's still playing right now.
Yeah, he's still playing. So, it was
weird. He came over to watch me play today. As far as I know, that's what happened. I mean, he was watching me play and he was looking at it and then he started asking, well, you said that, you know, in your review that there's some kits that are more accessible than others. And I was like, yeah, you could be the medic and you could be the heavy weapons guy or the engineer or the pyro. And those are your options. And then he went back to his desk and installed it.
As soon as he learned about support classes, he was all over it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And that is one of the things that about this game.
It's, yeah, for me, like, as, you know, I've talked about this before, but as the diehard Team Fortress Classic player, the medic is the most changed between games, and medic was my kit. Mm-hmm. And it's very much like a fighting game, you know, like it, and when they change in between sequels, your character, it throws you off. You're like, oh man, this is like,
do you feel betrayed?
It's not my game, you know, but eventually in a fighting game, you go on and pick a new character or whatever that, mm-hmm. you know, suits your style. But the thing is you get used to that because fighting game sequels come out fairly rapidly. This was 9 years in between. I didn't play for all 9 years.
It took a little bit of time there.
But I played for a good many of those 9 years. More of them than I didn't.
Did you guys ever see the old team, the first time they showed Team Fortress 2 at E3?
It was like Modern Warfare stuff.
Yeah. It was completely different game.
What, Battlefield?
It was like Battlefield, yeah.
Yeah.
And they were spending a great deal of time working on, you know, a role for a commander, which, you know, first appeared in Battlefield 2.
Right.
Stuff like that. But the medic, yeah, now he's if you want to spend a lifetime riding bitch, I mean, he's your man. You just you go around.
Just the medic.
Go around with the hose.
I play the medic a lot.
The medic is totally necessary.
But it's totally necessary. There's no doubt about that. He strengthens your team.
Yeah.
Offensively and defensively. But personally, you have to understand, I very much like high risk, high reward characters, mm-hmm. and classes rather. They're characters too now. And there's just not much to him. I mean, it's mm-hmm. you can make a case for, yeah, it's tactics to know when to use your Uber charge. But I mean, you don't even have to. When you're holding your love hose down, you find someone, you sweep it around, and then he's like, okay, that's the one, and you press the button and hold it, and you're locked. And then you just kind of, if your fingers move enough to the WASD, you just kind of follow him around with your love hose on. And I mean, well, yeah, that's a great way for people to get in the game. But I'm saying for me and my temperament and going from a person who would, you know, conk jump, try to, you know, capture flags and get in by the skin of my teeth, kill an SG with a nail gun, you know, use my grenades to do this and that and get in and out. Like, it's radically different.
I think there's totally a reason why I flocked to that right at the beginning, and that's just the... It is the entry point.
Yeah.
Like you can just you can latch onto someone. You don't have to know the map. You just kind of like...
Yeah, and you feel like you're contributing out and learn it.
And I've seen some clever uses of the medic, too. Like, I've seen, like, two medics on one guy.
You know, that's like, pretty clever.
Well, come on.
I mean, that's the banana-ritis.
But, I mean, as a way of, you know... Of almost being like invulnerable, you know, as a charge. It's a way to charge into a capture point, you know.
Oh, yeah. It's totally, it's great. And hey, and you love, I was in a game and it exposed it all when we were sitting there. I was talking with another Team Fortress Classic vet and we were, you know, commenting on all the various changes and what they've done to the game. And we were saying, oh, God, but the medic, though, what happened to him? And we were saying the whole thing. And like, we're also upset because the server host was on the other team. And he was, like, playing, you know, Big Kahuna, and he had a bunch of these little Schwielers who would play medic and follow him around, exactly as you're saying, a couple of them. Uh-huh. And then, so, you know, we were saying that, too, and asking them, you know, how does it feel to spend your whole life riding bitch? And they were getting mad, and the H-dub guy was getting mad, too. But so, anyway, I got to a point where I was like, shit, I need a medic. And then there's a medic next to us, and I just got done talking shit on what they did to the medic, and I'm like... But hey, I still appreciate that someone wants to play. So will you hook me up?
Yeah. I mean, when I was on servers this weekend, you know, I was on teams where no one wanted to be it, and we would almost invariably lose. And I think almost directly for that reason.
Definitely depends on the map. They're great, like you're saying, when you have, like, in Dust Bowl or something where you have massively concentrated defenses with builded units, sentry guns and stuff, you know. Mm-hmm. It gets to a point, and also provided that they have pyros there to spy check, that your spies alone aren't enough to do anything other than create confusion, and you have to have that ubercharged H-dub guy go in there and rip up all the SGs so you can get in. Mm-hmm. It's great for that. Other maps that are like much, you know, more high speed and stuff, you don't need to do it. I mean, if you're quick enough with your offense, you won't even get to the point where, you know, you got to have Fatty walk all the way up to the front lines from the backfield.
I've got to say the look of this game is so awesome. I haven't been this in love with a game's look in a long time.
Yeah,
it's so cool.
It's
cool. And it scales up and down too. You could be on a really crummy system and it still looks great.
Mm-hmm. I really didn't know what to think at first. You know, I
was the style. You didn't?
Not that I didn't like it. I was surprised by it. It just didn't seem very Valve.
It made absolute sense.
It does totally make sense.
What is the old format of team? It's you have two slate gray concrete bases and random dudes in this weird never land.
Yeah.
Like, what the fuck are these guys doing?
Right.
What are these bases? Why do they want this fucking flag so bad? And they took all that and said, hey, how can we answer that?
Yeah.
And again, I mean, I think when you look at games out there that are similar space, Shadowrun would be an example or something. And no one has had any... Why did it take so long for this specific solution?
Yeah.
The visual solution.
Right.
Because it's wonderful, and the contrast really makes it stand out. Because the other option, as we know, is the damn intergalactic Bloodsport. And that's, you know, that applies for Doom and for Unreal. Mm-hmm. And you're like, yeah, we just got all these dudes in space, and they like to kill each other for... Like,
there you go,
for sport, cash and big money.
It never gets old to watch this. Yeah. It never, just watching other people play, it's still so fun. All the animations, the body types of all the different characters, and the body types which make sense with the kind of class you're going to play.
And it might be the first time, too, that I recall seeing a multiplayer game of this nature where there's so much attention put on to various aspects of animation. So, for example, when you go from a full sprint forward to backpedaling, the fact that you change posture, that you're jumping, that when you're rocket jumping, you know, usually in games there's, you know, think of when you're in Halo or something, and you jump, your feet go up, and you just are kind of in this pose. You just stick the Matrix pose. And in this, I mean, your feet are kicking around, and every time, you know, when someone kills you and it freezes the screen and it zooms up to your killer and freezes the screen on them, almost every single time it does that, it looks like someone drew a character in a super expressive pose, but all it was pausing the game
cool
at any
face.
Given moment.
I love that every time. It never gets old to me, even with the music, the bam, bam, you know, that kind of 60s spy. Yep. Oh, and maybe that only comes when you get a new nemesis. I forget.
It doesn't happen every time around.
Yeah.
And then
when you're dominating, or like when
I also like today when you were playing on the big monitor and various people walking by from 1UP and the sales people, and everybody makes the same comment about, ah, it looks like a Roadrunner cartoon.
Yeah. Everyone liked to watch it in the first place, though, says something. The fact that, for one,
quite a crowd.
The console dudes coming by and actually stopping for a second other than to make some kind of snide remark is interesting. And this was funny because Donahoe from EGM was by and looking. He's like, oh, yeah, this is coming out on 362. And he's watching. And he's like, wow, it's really fast, because I was playing a scout at the moment, you know.
Mm-hmm. Oh.
And he's like, will it work on a controller? And it was funny because, like, I know you're so used to that crowd where – God, it seems impossible to believe, but there still are people who think that, given the certain exceptions like Halo, where from the very ground up, it's built to be a very slow game, mm-hmm. To think that maybe that the two interfaces are equally suited for that specific genre of game. Mm-hmm. And it was funny to see him like, yeah, dude, now you know what I'm talking about. I'm not just saying because I want to be like, PC's better or whatever. It's like, has nothing to do with that. Like, in the same way that I don't want to play... any number, like I wouldn't want to play, you know, basketball or like Fight Night or something with a mouse and keyboard. It'd be completely stupid.
Well, you know, of course, all things will be equal on the 360, right? I mean, everybody will be playing with the controller, obviously. So,
yes, they will.
Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, I'll be really interested to check it out on that platform to see how much different it plays.
Fuck that. No way. Again, if I played it on that and it's like being crippled.
Yeah.
I mean, in that game...
Do they get the exact same maps and everything?
It's so frustrating. It's the same game.
Same game?
Yeah, and it's just like... I mean, yeah, it's pretty much like playing with one hand tied behind your back or something. Mm-hmm. So I don't know why you'd want... I would not, unless you... The obvious answers. You don't have a PC that's capable of running it, or you just are completely incapable of using a mouse and a keyboard as a gaming interface, mm-hmm. then if you want to play Team Fortress... And get it on this. Not to transition yet into other games, but I think the same applies for Portal and Half-Life 2 as well. There are definitely moments in those games where you want reaction time. And the vehicle in Half-Life 2 Episode 2 is very clearly designed with the mouse and mm-hmm. keyboard interface.
I'll also say about the look of it too, that it, for whatever reason, for me, it makes it less intimidating. Even though the core gameplay really is kind of as intimidating as these games always have been.
Not as TFC.
Okay, maybe not the TFC, but that's you, though. Like,
no,
for me.
I would say for you. So here would be an example.
Okay. Look,
if you went in engineer now and you built a Sentry, right?
Yeah.
You know that, like, you build it and it's pretty much sustains itself, right? Mm-hmm. To be effective with that stuff, you would have to, I mean... Because all characters, like almost all characters, had a nail gun, and the range was shorter.
Right.
They were slower to traverse. People would have taken your SGs out every single time before you ever got a single kill. And if you detected that someone was coming in from its blind spot, you would have had to have manually rotated it in anticipation by, you know, clicking open a menu and saying rotate SG 180 degrees or something. Likewise, you'd have had to know the difference between armor and health. And the armor, which is also what you're using for, you know, since there's just ammunition in this, which was a whole nother thing. And, I mean, there's all these subtle.
So it might actually be an easier game.
Yeah.
But the look of it, just to me, it makes it more, I don't know, just accessible. Like the cartoony sheen to it makes it
feel. It's attractive. You want to play.
Yeah, right. Toys. You know, and in a way, I hate to compare things to WoW, but it kind of does that for me. Mm-hmm. Kind of the same thing. You know, it's like, to me, yet another example of where you're almost better off with that kind of approach than ultra realistic.
Yeah.
Totally agree. Mm-hmm.
You've got a few other options to make it fun for you, too. I mean, I saw you playing the H-Dub guy, and that's like, you can go in there as him, and you have a medic on your back now that makes him even... So he's, the H-Dub is even, you know, that was part of my thing, is I was concerned with the balance of this. It's like, is this, like, fat piece of crap too powerful? Because he was known... You know, in non-PC terms, as the wheelchair ramp to Team Fortress Classic. And mm-hmm. now he's the wheelchair elevator. And he's like, but the thing is with him now is that he gets the extra health. Before the engineer part of the balance, they had an electromagnetic pulse grenade. And the way that it worked is that it would detonate all ammunition that you had stored on yourself. Heavy weapons guy, of course, carried the most ammunition for that big, massive gun. So you hit that piece of crap with one of those. And say it was Spite, but it's like, this is from the old game, where every time you'd see one, you'd groan. You're like... dude, who is playing that? You got to be so dumb. Now I'm over it because there's so many classes that are, the balance is just generally different. But so again, you'd hit him with that. That would blow him up. If you're a medic or a scout, you could hit him with a concussion grenade and it would throw his aim off. Mm-hmm. But now you could snipe him in the head. Anywhere else is not going to do it. If he's got a medic, he's not going to do anything except enhance your max damage score for your achievements. and other than that, I mean, you have to approach him differently, you know? I mean, you can bombard him with, I mean, if you're demo man, you can bombard him. Soldier, you can. Scouts, if you catch an H-dub on his own, you can run circles around him, clubbing him over the head with your club. But
I don't find him invulnerable at all. I mean,
he's not invulnerable.
Yeah, no. I mean, when I see one on the other team, I'm not like, oh, God. Yeah. I mean, you can take these guys down.
Rory was laughing at you, though. I remember he was beating you over the head with with the scout and his little bat, and you were the H-dub. And he was laughing because you were trying to, instead of turning around and then spinning your gun, you were spinning your gun up and then trying to turn afterward.
Yeah, I was.
So you were like the world's slowest tank turret.
Okay, well, laughing at me is like, you know, laughing at the retarded kid, you know. I stink. Laugh at me.
You can. I mentioned the banana riders, but that's like what when we first started playing. That's RYDAZ. when we first started playing, everyone on our Steam friends list or on my, you know, that I could get in the server and boom, they will appear within seconds. You'll see they join the server.
You're that popular.
Well, it's just the nature of the banana riding.
Yeah.
quit saying that. You're making me uncomfortable. You're all quiet. It's just a straight up turn. I'm not trying to make you laugh with it. That's what this is. So they would come in, and then they all be like a medic for you and hook you up. Right. And I was trying to tell you when you played, see, the people in the server didn't know you were in the game because they don't know your Steam tag.
Yeah.
There was, however, one of the Banana Riders' Steam tag is Jeff FTW or Jeff for the win.
Yeah.
And they all thought you were him, so he was getting the benefit
of it. Yeah, that's what I named myself.
And they were like, you know, give us your sexy voice, Jeff. Give us your sexy voice, like to this guy. And they continued to do so.
That's funny.
Yeah, so you got to.
Yeah, I'm Dufayus. I don't mind saying my tag is Dufayus. That's who I'm.
Yeah,
there.
People can figure out how to spell it.
Yeah. But I love this game so far. If the other two parts of Orange Box are as good as this, that is going to be a solid contender. Count as one game for, like, a game of the year thing?
I guess it would. Well, I guess the Orange Box would have to count as a game
of a product of the year, maybe.
Yeah. That's a big thing. The difference between, I'm very happy that, you know, at GFW, I reviewed each one of these games separately. And for me, that's the difference between reviewing a product and reviewing games. And I know games are a product, but they're also something else. And it's that saying, you know, if you look at it all at one, you're saying, hey, my job is to tell people if this is a value. And all the debates about whether, you know, are these games, not these games, but I mean, is any game, is it enough content for the price it's charging? Should it have been more? Should it have been less? All that stuff. I mean, whatever. Like, I don't feel like compelled to do that because I know everyone else does it.
Right.
Going to an EB, I mean, anyone in the message boards, you know, that's all people are talking about. So
in some
I
cases,
to look
though,
at
it's going
to
matter, though, right? The price is going to matter sometimes, like a Shadowrun.
In a few cases, it will. I mean, I'm not saying the price is irrelevant.
Yeah.
But it's like, I mean, each of these games is very distinct and is an entire game in and of itself. And you can look at them. I don't object to looking at them together as being, in this case, I think it makes sense because they all come from the same developer and they all, you know, with different branches of that developer.
Yeah.
But they're indicative of what that company's about right now, what they're trying to do, and there are certain themes unifying them. Mm-hmm. In Portal and Half-Life 2, they're actually, you know, linked with narrative. But so I don't object to that, but just the whole, like, is this, you know, just the value prospect of the whole thing, whatever, you know.
Is Portal linked directly to Episode 2 in terms of narrative or just the Half-Life universe?
I'm not going to give spoilers away, but let's just say that the games are connected in some way.
Okay.
Cool. In a way will get people very excited.
I keep hearing great things about Portal.
It's awesome. Portal's so good. I'll have to come. If we're going to go into this now, I want to come back to Team Fortress later because we have, like, dude, it's grieving time again.
Already so soon.
But, well, even on that, just general, like, this whole week, I have to say, having played you know, episode 2 Portal, this, I can't talk about them, but I'm in the beta for Crisis Multiplayer, Frontlines, of course, Opposing Fronts has still been playing. Mm-hmm. And now and then, you know, as a gamer, you hit these points where you're like, ah, and it just is kind of a bummer when you don't have that one game that makes you want to play as soon as you look at your computer and you're like, shit, or as soon as you talk about it to a friend. Mm-hmm. Like, after this, we're going to all want to go home and play TF2 tonight. Mm-hmm. The whole time I wrote the review, every, like, hour, I would alt-tab into the game and go play some more. Mm-hmm. At that point, I no longer felt like I needed specific reference. It wasn't, like, fact-checking. It was just because, like, I would write about it and be like, yeah, shit, I got to go do that again.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's awesome.
And but it's a great, like, I love that feeling when, you know, when you're going to bed and you're thinking about a game. I mean, it's obsessive, but and you wake up and you're like, ah, this is cool. And you're kind of like, my day is good because, you know, when you outline for yourself when you wake up, is this a day to be excited about or is it not? And you've got mm-hmm. like all these other things that you can add in there. The games are just one small part of it, but it's also mm-hmm. cool. And sometimes you get a day for like the Uber nerd. You'd be like, dude, new comics came out today. There's a new episode of Lost on tonight. I just got fucking TF2. Girlfriend's coming to visit, whatever else you add to there too. You're making your dinner or you're going out to dinner. But it's definitely like one of those weeks now. I'm like back in like, ah, this is rad. Like there's game. I love gaming right now. There's stuff
it's
play
such a great time.
Excited
uncannily
about.
Good.
You keep looking at the release list for the rest of this year. I'm like, holy crap.
Yeah, it's crazy.
I'm going to be emotionally unavailable for the next like 2 months.
Yeah, my wife and kid on Sunday, we're going to go away the entire day, you know, and I knew this like for a few days coming up, and my wife kept going, are you sure it's okay? Because, you know, you're going to be alone. And I was, oh, no, I'll be okay. And the whole time I was like, yes. I'm going to be in Team Fortress 2 at like 9:45 a.m. because they're out of the house already. I was like marathon in front of the screen.
Hop right on.
And then, you know, Saturday it's like, hey, good news. Well, Sarah, my daughter, she's going off to the thing and it turns out they don't need any more adults. So I'm going to be home with you today.
I was wondering how you were able to play a lot.
No. Well, but she was home, so like, oh, that's great, honey.
great news.
Apparently, you didn't
change
your plans.
So we get to spend the day together, and I won't be on the computer.
Do you want to
okay.
be
bad?
Bad news.
Oh, we've been married a long time. I could say this. Love you, honey.
The trouble now. Though,
anytime you want to go away, though, that's cool.
It's these games, like even TF2 alone, is so much fun, and it has every indication of being that way for a long time to come. That now, yeah, at first it's like it's not an either or, you know, are you gonna be playing UE3, you can be playing Crisis Multiplayer, Quake Wars, Fortress Forever, but like now it kind of sucks because like if even two of them are as good as Team Fortress 2,
yeah,
it's really gonna
be a bounty.
Yeah, they needed to come out sooner. I mean a lot of these did. Quake Wars needed to come out sooner, Fortress Forever did.
I got a question to my mailbox that I will throw out there to you and anyone who may know, asking about the noob-friendly factor of TF2 versus Quake Wars.
Hmm. What's the question?
Which would be better for a multiplayer noob?
Yeah. Team Fortress all the
you
way.
Think?
No
totally.
Question about it. Really?
Oh, God.
Fewer objectives, fewer things to focus on. It's just kind of like be a medic and watch people play, I guess.
I was tempted to say the opposite because I thought that there were, you know, what I just remember from playing early on with Quake Wars, that there were support class things that you could really do like behind the scenes, like back on the base and things. Like you didn't have to get your ass out there on the front line as much. No?
Yeah, maybe again it's just my bias thinking that
true.
Who would ever do that? Like even if you... I mean, you're talking about just sitting right in your back base. Well,
there's
you'd
a
even
difference
have to,
between
pretty much.
You'd have to get into
that
what
you want kind of what I did.
The reason, like, I want to play a medic or whatever, an engineer, is so I can get out there in a fashion that isn't necessarily like on the direct front line, but learn mm-hmm. like right behind them. Essentially.
I see.
That's the reason I would want to do that.
So you don't actually sit in the first spawn point hiding like I do,
cowering in the
awesome.
Sand.
And then, like, when you win, how you're like, yay, go guys.
You did great.
You just got to worry about when one of your teammates is dead and they're, like, cycling through the players and they see you just kind of squatting there in the corner, you know.
Quake Wars has got just lots of weird nuances. It's got vehicles that are, like, not necessarily intuitive right when you walk into them. So
yeah, it really does go out of its way to teach people how to play it and to assist them. But the only reason it has to do that is because it's so complex in the first place.
Yeah.
But on, you know, on the other hand, I guess if someone really wanted to ramp up on it, they could play against the bots until they felt comfortable against the, you know, learning all the nuances of it.
TF2 does lack the bots. So I guess you could just create a private server, right? And just
if all you
want to
do is
around
learn
by yourself.
Your character or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. And TF2 does have the simplistic, you know, here's where to go next thing, which they built into the environment in a non-cheesy way.
Mm-hmm.
You know, just follow the red arrow down to the next spot. You know, it's so nice.
Yeah, science
when you don't know.
Capture point.
I mean, why not? They made the whole thing a cartoon anyway.
Spy versus spy almost.
Yeah.
The awesome thing about it, too, is that because in most cases, the capture point, you know, in a few specific cases, capture points go in an order, or if they're staggered out, it's not quite like a Battlefield thing where there's a bunch of stuff everywhere.
Yeah.
But then unlike Quake Wars, where it's all or nothing, where once you gain territory, you can't lose it again, and you sort of progress through the pseudo narrative of the level that, like, you know, take the shields down, get in the bunker, destroy this, that. You know, comparison I made in the review, and it's always been the case for the game, you know, even in Team Fortress and Team Fortress Classic, is that it's very much like football, and the vibe you get where And because of that, it's also a game where you die a whole hell of a lot, but it's not as frustrating in there, because if you're at the line of scrimmage in this game and you're going up and the team that's getting pushed back has got turrets and heavy weapon guys and stuff, and you're trying to break that stalemate, you're going to go up there, and it's pretty much like the linemen all like in a big mashup, you know?
Yep.
And you could be one of those, and that's rewarding its own way, or you can be one of the classes that's equivalent of a wide receiver, try to get through, or, you know, be in the backfield and do your thing there too if you want as an engineer. And it's just because it's like football doesn't mean it's good, but it's very unique though in that respect. The flow of the matches in this game are very unique and
they're pretty generous with their respawn time too. It seems much more you're back in the game pretty quickly. There's not that big a penalty for dying. You know,
yeah, you'd be surprised to know that it's a bigger penalty than ever before in the game, but
is it really?
Yeah, I mean,
it doesn't feel that punitive.
You can wait upwards of, 20 seconds sometimes, right?
You can wait up to
20 is about right.
The way that works, again, is based on balancing. So in proximity to, you know, like, say, for example, in the same way that, like, you know, in Well, the final capture point on either side turns over to the other team very, very rapidly. And that's because it's in such close proximity to your spawn cabinet or spawn room or whatever. But yeah, I mean, sometimes it's just the way it works. So it's definitely not like Counter-Strike. At least you're not
watching the whole match.
That's what I remember. Yeah. Respawn dead.
Yeah, that's not fun. I mean, that's a game that's just brutal to learn. You're supposed to go in and learn, but like, all right, here I am. Boom, there I go.
Yeah, it's impossible.
And then the guy's running around for another 3 minutes or so.
Yeah.
Shadowrun did that too.
Long. So we started to talk about Portal.
Just a little bit, right?
Yeah.
You,
only you've played it, though.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Anything about it?
Well, how can we do a spoiler-free discussion on it?
Yeah.
I can just say a few things about it, then. Going into that game, that was the last one when I played through these that I was like, I'll just save this for last. Like, it looks cool. The idea of the puzzle, I mean, the gimmick behind the puzzle is great. But at the end of the day, I'm like, it's a puzzle game. I'm going to be doing a bunch of puzzles. And is this one puzzle too much for a straight playthrough session? I was very surprised to find out that, in traditional fashion with Valve, they ease you into it, you know, perfectly. So you start off with the most simple, here's how the system of this game works, how you're able to use your portal gun and this net to maneuver through this environment. But then it introduces just extraordinary atmosphere and extraordinary environment. I'm sitting there looking at you guys. I'm like, I don't need a monologue on this, but it is fucking damn cool. You read the review I wrote on it.
I've heard nothing but good things about it. And I believe that Eric and Chet from the great old man Murray site did a lot of
the
story and the dialogue.
And it's one of the funniest games that I've ever played.
And there
played.
You go. Yeah.
They did some awesome stuff on it. Give you some examples on that. Turrets, for example, will talk to you. They have this coy, childlike, you know, voice. Of course, it's distorted. And they'll be like,
where did you go? I see you. Or like, come back here. I need to kill you or whatever, you know, but not kill you, because it's like it imbues them with identity, but they're not aware. It's kind of like the big lug who, the term is sweetly retarded, where you could be as opposed to violently retarded, you know, but I mean, like, it's capable of hurting you. It's
big goon. Well,
mice and men, you know, like
Lenny.
Yeah, basically the turrets are Lenny and you're the rabbit.
We've had a couple of those. EGM's had a couple interns that were like that.
Shit. Ooh. I'm sitting there trying to think of who. So they're like that, and they're talking with you and playing with you. The thing is with this is, like, without saying just how much of it, giving you an idea of how funny it is without spoiling too much, maybe I'll just let it wait on that one.
I heard that they do a nice crate joke.
Okay.
Because they're the originators of the time to crate.
Right. As you know already, in the game you're a test subject of some sort. We've seen that much before. In all previews, we've known that you're the equivalent of some sort of lab rat. So just know that with that situation there, and with talented writers behind that, and all the things they're going to do, keeping in mind that Valve also, you know, is able to track your performance in games, so they know how long a specific puzzle takes you and stuff. That adds just this extra level of fun to the whole thing, that you know that, hey, if your character who's a lab rat takes, you know, I word was that there was an EA executive who it took 12 hours to beat the game, which is pretty sad, because I think I estimated it, like, just giving a rough thing for most players is 3 to 4 hours. EA's got that information.
Oh,
you know? Login name Dufay has spent 4.5 hours on this one puzzle.
Oh, man.
And because of its similarities to, you know, like,
tabbed out.
An IQ test spatial reasoning section where, I mean, you need to look at a physical space and see how things are connected in ways. What happens if I put a portal here and exit here? And keeping
that's
in mind,
hard. I sucked at geometry.
Maybe you'll have a few points where you get stumped. I'm not sure.
Sounds awesome.
I mean,
to me.
It grades up at a very, very, you know, even pace. But most importantly, though, and here's the difference: is it's not that the puzzles were better than I expected, but because of the story, you want to keep playing.
Mm-hmm.
It's definitely the reward at the end of the maze for you. You know, the incentive to go through this maze. I keep hitting this wall of what to say. But okay, let's go to the crate. Here's an example of some of the fun earlier on. The artificial intelligence that's running this whole program that you're in. It's not a program, actually. That's not a spoiler, so don't think that. But who's not a computer program, rather, but who's running the initiative? Maybe like the Dharma Initiative. It is a kind of a lost.
Oh, great!
Game.
Thanks for ruining it.
It all takes place in a hatch. The entire game.
This is in the Pearl.
Yeah. So, it's really weird. I mean, it's kind of an unreliable narrator. And at one point, it tells you, you know, you need this crate to help you hit these switches that will ultimately help you open doors or power various things that are going to let you proceed through this puzzle. And it not only gives you a crate, but it's got hearts all over it, and it's called a companion. It calls it your companion cube, and it talks to you like a mother about, you know, taking great care of your companion cube. And it's basically a crate with the heart on it. You know, do your best with this thing. Here's part of the picture. Then eventually, it tells you to put the thing in a damn incinerator and burn it. And it says it's not only that, but it's important that you're the one who does it. You need to get rid of this companion cube because you're maybe a little too attached to it now. And I was pretty much just fucking with you by calling it a companion cube. It's just a stupid crate. And it tells you to do that after you've gone with it. But then that's not the end of the joke. The game does some really great things with it there. And that goes what I think might be a little bit too much into spoiler territory.
Okay.
I already know too much.
Yeah, thanks.
I get Ryan wasn't planning on playing it, so I gave him the full breakdown this morning, and that's probably why, like, that might have been my rehearsal for, like, describing the game. But the problem is that was no holds barred in it, so, like, it was very, very easy to start from A and move on through. But to look forward to it, I think I will say this, that it is going to be one of those games that's talked about for a long time to come.
Mm-hmm.
For its humor, for, you know, the subtlety of some of the things it does, and ultimately, though, for proving that a 3-hour game is, like, completely creatively viable, that you don't play it and say, well, that feels like a ripoff. That's why I think, you know, when I was bringing up this whole, like, let's sit and argue about whether or not this is too much money or enough for this.
Yeah.
It's like, let the game decide. Like, this game is awesome. Like, when you play it, you're like, hey, that is satisfying. If it had gone, uh-huh. if this had been 8 hours of these puzzles, sure, I would have probably got, like, tired of it, you know?
Yep. But that was my reaction
there's
to...
There's no filler in it at all.
The first Katamari was that way for me.
Yeah.
I don't know if it would still... But the first time when that whole concept was so novel, I beat that game real fast. But I bought it, and it was totally worth it to me.
Yeah.
Just to try a new gaming experience like that. I didn't feel ripped off at all.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know, you know, I say creative viability as opposed to, you know, financial, you know, market viability. I hope that the latter proves to be the case also. Valve clearly didn't believe that to be the case on consoles because they're releasing the game as this big value box, mm-hmm. not yep. as individual things. Some of that on mm-hmm. Xbox at least might be them not agreeing to the conditions of Live, or Live not, or the other way around, Live mm-hmm. saying, hey, this shit's too big, or
right.
it's not enough to be a full game, and it's too big to be a mini game. We don't want this in this format
yeah.
or something.
Yeah.
But these yeah. are awesome, and it really makes you ask, like, why the hell are games the way that we... You know, the lengths that we know that they are, and, you know, in an experience of this sort. And because there's less to it, I mean, they obviously save money, you know, generating assets and stuff by this sort of thing. But now that you have, you know, the option for, you know, digital distribution, or, I mean, you could just sell these things in the store. God knows,
sure.
burning a DVD does not cost much for production. And I would love a bunch more games like this. I mean, it is definitely one of my favorite experiences of the year. And, I can't wait to see more games like it.
Yeah, I mean, why shouldn't there be games that cost $10 at the store, $5, $15?
I wish more developers would just be not afraid to make a shorter game sometimes.
Right.
So many games that I love, just yeah. like there's sections where I'm just like, you could have had, you know, this is
yeah.
a little like padding.
Yeah.
But we look at, again, well, we look, it's the damn, we look at them as products, you know, mm-hmm. and people say, oh, it wasn't long enough, and was it like enough for the value and stuff? Wasn't like, was this game... For what this game wants to accomplish, was it just the right length? Was it too long or mm-hmm. too short? And a lot of games, I think, are too long because
yeah,
it's
totally.
This is what Valve wanted to do with the episodes from the beginning. This was the most important part of it, and I believe this is what they were saying at the beginning. I now believe them. They weren't like, hey, it's not about micro-chunking the shit and making money off recycling, cannibalizing our own stuff and giving you, like, basically the equivalent of remixes, you know, episodes and stuff
right.
like that. But this is because... For the reasons that we just explained, that gaming doesn't have short stories or novellas and all these other forms. It's got basically the equivalent of a serial, you know, TV show or something like that. But all at once, like a box set, but you're
yeah.
expected to do the whole thing at once. I guess that would be closer. Mm-hmm. I don't want to say movie because you can watch a movie in 3 hours or mm-hmm. something. And and when movies are made, the question is always, how much of this can we cut out and still have the movie we want to make? You know, it's never... Like with most games that we're used to, it's how much shit can we put into this game until we hit the 10-hour mark or the 8-hour mark or whatever the mark is, you know? How can we take the levels we've already made and run you back through the damn things and you know, over and over again until we hit that mark? And what happens now, and what Valve was saying, is without that constraint, we can make a game where every single thing in here is there because we're completely satisfied with the way it turned out. Because it's there because someone had an idea and pitched it and said, hey, there's very good reason for this to be in this game. And the way the collaborative process works. And instead, you get these games where, you know, you want to play them straight through. I did that with episode 2 as well. And when you're done, the whole thing sits in your mind, the whole experience front to back. You can point out any specific moment and talk about that instead of just, oh, remember this level, and mm-hmm. it's kind of fuzzy in between there and stuff, you know, or even debating. Is that the one with the gray walls or is that the one with the green walls, you know? And they just nailed it. Like, I really
right.
hope to see
but
more of this.
They did that even way back with Halo. I'm sorry, not Halo. With Half-Life 1, which was a long game, but they still... I mean, they're a particularly talented group of developers
yeah.
who know how to design
this,
memorable levels.
For them, let them make games on a near-yearly basis rather than five-year basis.
Of course, they said at first it was going to be every 3 months.
Yeah, I don't know where that went. that was some smoking...
Yeah,
that was wishful thinking.
That was on our cover.
That was some Ninja Gold resulting there.
Yeah, And didn't we say that on the cover line? The new Half-Life every 3 months.
Yes.
But they didn't say guaranteed. Maybe you're buying into your own cover line writing.
Probably. Yeah.
What they said was
no, like, I write bullshit like cover lines. I forgot.
No, but the comment,
asterisk.
The comment was along the lines of we would like to have them like maybe every 3 or 4 months or so.
Yeah.
And I'm sure they
would
like to.
Yeah.
But it wasn't like, hey, this is exactly, you know, how it's going to shake out.
It's hard to not write those hyperbolic cover lines, you know, trying to sell magazines. You know, it's like we had the World of Warcraft Secrets !! Mm-hmm. cover line a while ago. And that was a great article. It was. But there were no secrets. We lied.
That's the secret.
That was the big secret.
I couldn't.
No, it was like interviews with the developers, and there was really cool stuff in there, and they said a lot about the game that people didn't know before because we did good interviews. So I guess those were secrets.
Yeah, if you didn't know about it.
Yeah,
it was a secret because no one asked.
Because no one cared.
Anything else to say? I mean, more on and once again, episode 2 might be my favorite of the series.
That's saying a lot.
It is. Yeah. I like it more than episode 1 a lot.
More than Half-Life 1 and 2, the big games?
I like previously, my ordering was that Half-Life 2 was the best, Half-Life 2 proper. Now it's still again hard to compete with that, and the cases I made was just because it introduced so many things and had so much variety.
Novel.
But this is a clear contender because they just know how to make the kind of game they make so well now. Mm-hmm. They get better with it every time, but it's just like so. It's every 20 minutes you're doing something different.
Yep.
And it grades seamlessly from one activity to another. You avoid that feeling of like, okay, here I'm in this world. I just blast everything until like they play me a little movie. And then I go and blast some more shit. I'm supposed to pretend that movie had something to do with me running around blasting shit. It's all part of the same thing. Anytime you finish a fight or you're in the middle of a fight and you deal with another character in the game, sure, you can't talk with them. They can talk at you, right? Mm-hmm. You can observe them talking with one another. There's no dialogue tree or anything like that. But you feel that this stuff is part of the, and because of that, because you might go from doing some super clever puzzle to a small encounter to a puzzle of an entirely different nature to some driving to a massive encounter to some downtime with a whole group of people, and the game's cast continues to grow, you know, both just in depth and also in breadth. I mean, there are more characters that they introduce, and every time they introduce like a new character, you're like, I want to see more of this guy or this girl's crazy. And because of it, I experience all the story as part of the game. Like I was there and I watched these people have this discussion and I did all this stuff. You know, I was an actor in the environment when this stuff happened. And this for me, some people have no issues with cutscenes. I mean, because kind of in a way, I mean, this is more than a discussion about cutscene to cutscene or not, you know, but it's part of it. And for me, I can never connect the two together. When I play a game and there's a cutscene, it's never worked for me any more than it did in Pac-Man when you beat 3 levels or whatever it was and the damn baby Pac-Man gets formed or whatever.
In any game, you can't think of any cutscene that
they just don't work for
you.
Me.
Okay.
And then I like watching sometimes, you know, in some of the classic ones, like, you know, in like Devil May Cry and stuff, but like, but it's not, for me, there's just this disconnect. It's kind of like if you were trying to think of some example where it's some supplementary fiction and it's not part of what I'm doing. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't work for me that way. So maybe I appreciate the Half-Life, you know, and Valve approach more for that
reason.
I'm
trying to think if there's any that.
Well, what do you think of those dopey interactive cutscenes they have these days? It's kind of like, it's almost like Dragon's Lair when you're just like, okay.
Yeah, those are completely.
Oh. You mean like in-engine ones?
Or in-engine, like
God of
Resident
War
Evil. Like God of War, Indigo Prophecy.
Right.
And any of that stuff where you're like, instead of making you sit there and watch the game, you're actually, you know, tapping a button for no reason whatsoever.
I'd almost rather have a straight-up cutscene if they're going to have the choice between a cutscene and a cutscene.
It just means
a
cutscene you're going to have to watch again.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. I have to watch it again, and plus, like, it distracts me from what's going on. Like, I'm just, like, going, where's this? Do I have to hit triangle? Do I have to triangle? My concentration's on which button to press rather than...
Yeah.
We know, though, that these are very successful. Yeah. A lot of people loved talking about them. I mean, there was that one video from God of War 2 that people turned into an animated, you know, a GIF file, and it was, you know, one of the harpy sequences, and you're watching it, and you're like, oh, yeah, I remember Dragon's Lair. What's up, Dragon's Lair? Look,
totally.
Yeah.
And But they think it's the greatest thing ever.
Well, for
so
me,
I mean, it definitely works for some people. It's a subjective thing. It doesn't work for me.
Those are almost better to like for the people watching than the people playing to me.
Yeah,
like, someone
yeah.
sitting there watching you play the game, that's cooler to them almost.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And they tend to just prove like, I mean, you play Devil May Cry or something, and you look and you're the goddamn acrobatic ninja in the cutscene, and while you're still mobile in the game, but then you look and there's like some tiny ass wall you can't jump over. Maybe that was a bad example, but we all know some game.
Yeah,
that
sure.
Holds
I know
true.
What you're talking about.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah,
totally.
Yeah.
The identity that they're trying to paint, the picture they're painting in the cutscene is like entirely detached from the game. You're like, okay, well, that's great. Why can't I jump over this stupid fucking tire? You know? So that was there. But that's the other thing is that they Half-Life 2, Episode 2 and Portal are both along those lines. They're very much like movies for me in that they are going from scene to scene, and there's, you know, when you make a movie or when you write a short story or a novel or something, you pay attention to the pacing of the whole, how all the parts fit together, mm-hmm. and how, you know, what happens when you look at the entire thing. But I mean, when you have, I mean, most games are so big now, you have different teams designing different levels, and that I'm sure happens at Valve too. But I mean, I don't know if there's not enough oversight or what, but I mean, you know, even like Medal of Honor or something, you know, like there's five levels. It's like it could have been a bunch of different teams that made each of the different ones, and they're just there. There's nothing between them. I mean, there's like a I don't know. I got a huge glow factor from having played those games. I came back and I just wanted to talk about them. I wanted to tell
you just have that because you got to play it first.
That's definitely why.
That's what we started his review too.
Yeah, I was the first.
The first journalist.
First journalist in North America.
How it feels to be the first person to
imagine how it
feels
must feel.
About me having played it,
yeah. And you didn't. Yeah. No, but actually, I did have one question. So last week, you sent us an email like right after you finished playing it, saying you liked it better. Is it better than BioShock?
I don't know, but when I finished it, I was asking myself. I said to myself, "Dude, I don't know if I like this more or not." Mm-hmm. And that was all. I didn't even really need to question it further because mm-hmm. I don't really care. Like,
right.
That just means,
you don't need
like,
to
yeah, I love
them.
It's nice to have that problem.
But the fact
right?
that, yeah.
Yeah, for sure.
Like, it was.
And BioShock, speaking of length, I actually didn't finish it, but I found out from Mr. Malloy here that I guess I'm on the end boss now. And I was surprised, actually, that it turns out that was the end, and yet not disappointed. Like, I feel like that was enough BioShock.
Yeah, there was
a good length.
Enough,
some people
enough,
I've heard criticize that it was actually too long. That after
really?
a certain key event, they felt like it dragged down. More than one person I heard say that.
Oh, after
I don't
the kind of twist, I don't agree. Yeah,
no, I think it actually worked pretty well.
I remember being when I got to you know that point.
Yeah,
I was going, oh, I hope this isn't over yet. Mm-hmm. I remember distinctly
yeah,
thinking
right.
that. Because I thought it was.
I mean, it
right,
wasn't.
Right.
It wasn't like you know going back to you know Halo 1 or something. You know something we're going to talk about later. But uh-huh. I mean, like in the original Halo, when you have to go through the library.
Right.
I mean, like that was an obvious case where they were trying to stretch out the gameplay
right.
time.
Well, I also hoped when I was playing BioShock and you hit that point with Andrew Ryan that wasn't going to end up being the first third. Like when it turned out that wasn't the end, mm-hmm. I was also hoping I was at least at the halfway point.
Oh, okay.
Because I felt like I was getting. Like, let's move it on here.
See,
and in fact, they did.
When I was playing Half-Life and Portal, I didn't even think about length,
well,
which
yeah.
is part of the thing. You know, I've never
yeah.
was like,
yeah.
But you know, I wasn't playing long enough to say. Because I think when you ask yourself, like, yeah, I wonder how much left there is, you're really,
yeah, you are, you are,
and maybe not in the long run, but at least for that specific session, you're probably mm-hmm. to the point where you're ruining
save.
The game for yourself, or you're diminishing the enjoyment mm-hmm. you could get from it by not turning it off and playing it the next day
mm-hmm.
rather
yeah.
than just dragging your session on beyond.
Right. I do know that's my experience in general. I think with every entry in the Half-Life series, it's always just been totally fun. Mm-hmm. I've never felt like I wish they would move on.
Right.
They've always been so greatly paced.
Well, I was going to say, that's an interesting point, because you just mentioned that there comes that point when you play a game where you have to turn it off.
Yeah.
And here, you were sitting in a room for 3 days playing these three different games, right?
But it took a lot. I mean,
but
like
I mean,
I said, it was 3 hours for one. The other, I'm playing these games pretty quickly, so it was about 5 hours for
right.
the other. But then I was able, because of that length, you're able to go and play them again.
Mm-hmm.
They have commentary mode to support that.
Right.
And also just to... You know, like in a way, you had a great short story. Like, how many times? I mean, think of your favorite short story. How many times have you read it? You know,
mm-hmm.
I mean, it's easy to go back and hit that mm-hmm. again.
I still read Green Eggs and Ham.
Yeah,
that's
I know.
One of my favorite short stories.
We need Ryan here to talk about
so funny.
The issue of Flash. If that was better than your Green Eggs and Ham.
No, Green Lantern.
Yeah.
Green Lantern versus Green Eggs and Ham.
Fight!
Green Lanterns and Ham.
Sinestro versus Green Eggs and Ham.
Maybe we should take one of those breaks.
Okay, well, we'll take a break, and we'll be back with lots more.
Be one of the first to play Guitar Hero 3 at Digital Life, happening in New York City on Thursday, September 27th through Sunday, September 30th at the Javits Convention Center. Play against the girls of the PMS clan at the Celebrity Lounge or compete to win $100,000 in the Pro-Am Gaming Tournament. Tickets are available at www.digitallife.com. For a limited time, get your tickets at half price by entering 1UP in the source code box at the top of the Get Tickets Now page.
And we're back! You know, we've been talking about games pretty much this whole time. We've been like all straight with, you know, with the gaming.
Stop that right now.
It's nonsense.
Want to talk
about
heroes?
Not what the kids listen to here for.
God. You know? I had some, while I was gone up there and I was hanging with my friend Hans, I had so many things. I was like, I should make a mental note of this, and which is to say that I did make a mental note of it and for the podcast, but now I forget them all.
I've had a non-gaming question.
One, it was random ass shit. Like, one was we were joking on, you know anything about the Wu-Tang Clan?
Yeah, sure.
What you know about the Wu-Tang Clan? No, the Wu-Tang Clan, like...
What? They're my homies.
Part of the shit about that is, like, hilarious in a good way is that the numerology and stuff that the RZA and the GZA are always trying to drop, you know, they're like, this is significant, you know, the check.
Don't they have, like, Ghostface Killa in them, too?
They got the Ghostface.
See?
He's one
of the
Wu-Tang Clan.
There you go.
But so,
I know
they try to...
I know my rap.
It's like Wu-Tang Calculus, and it never makes any sense. They say, you know, oh, there's, you know, we call this track chess boxing because, you know, there's so-and-so many squares on the chessboard. You divide that by number of members in the Wu-Tang Clan. You multiply that by number of tracks on the album, you get like the name of God and whatever, you know, like, but so they're infamous for that kind of thing. And we were just talking about like blowing smoke up people's asses for whatever reason and saying how, what did it come from? The square, taking the square root of Wu-Tang Clan to get something. But anyway, we were like, okay, what if we tried to, interview RZA for the podcast? But just say, which is just dreaming. Like I said, this is like some bullshit.
Why wouldn't he want to be with us?
He's got shit to do. He's got a new album to release. It's coming out this year.
We could talk to him about that.
But like, you know, they had the Wu-Tang game. But just to go to him, like approach this guy, like, you know, like this game changed your life. And this was like the sickest game ever. And just be pointing out all sorts of stuff like a significance junkie where no significance is there. You know, yeah, like a lost fan gone wrong.
Sure.
And if you could do it with a straight face. But I mean, that's like a dangerous prospect trying to punk a RZA like that. But I mean, just, you know, all the things you can tell him about how this game, the Wu-Tang Clan game, was so good.
You know, there was a Devo game. Do you remember that?
No.
Adventures of the Smart Patrol.
That was a CD-ROM. It was like one of those.
It was one of those like movie. Yeah, they were like little QuickTime videos of Devo. Yeah. It was all based on Devo's whole mythology, you know.
They have a mythology?
Devo mythos.
Sure, they do.
Backstories.
Go Wikipedia them. They got this whole de-evolution of man thing. Believe. Speaking of game universes, that's right.
Let's move on here.
Let's talk about the big one.
Yeah.
The epic story of Halo finally released today. Tonight. No yawning. No yawning. We're all happy. No hating. Mm-hmm. We're all happy, right?
It could be sick.
No, it could be great.
We're not happy, though, because it's been overexposed in certain ways.
Yeah. Right. This is why I wanted to bring this up today.
We kind of touched upon
it. Because, you know, I blogged about it. I blogged, I guess, this morning or last night because I was seeing the blog editor blogs getting clogged up with Halo 3 stuff. And you know, a couple of comments on there were like, why do you have to hate? You haven't even played it yet. And, you know, we don't. We don't hate the Halo.
No,
I like the Halo.
We don't. In fact, I think all four of us in this room have played Halo 1 and 2. Is that correct?
Yep.
All
yep.
the way through. Probably multiple times.
Multiple times. Mm-hmm.
It would be disingenuous to say I love it.
I like it.
Right. Exactly.
So this is one of the questions folks had for me. Someone said, like, well, you guys always say, like, well, what's the big deal about Halo? Like, you know, you say you're not being PC snobs about it, but so what is it about it that doesn't excite you the way it does other people? So I thought maybe we could talk about that a little.
It's for me, it's a case of it's so hyped up when I feel there are just so many other first-person shooter kind of games that are just more worthy of being hyped. And to me, that's a turnoff in a lot of cases. And even before I was, you know, doing this as my living, mm-hmm. like, hype would always just kind
of... So is it a little bit of a backlash?
It's a knee-jerk reaction to all the ads I see. I mean, like, you walk into a 7-Eleven, there's Game Fuel Mountain Dew slushy Slurpee, right, that's, you know, tied with a limited edition Halo 3.
So has the success killed it a little then for you, do you think? Or
part of it has, and I think, but it's like the success of we have to acknowledge how well they're handling the marketing of this game.
Oh, it's awesome. Like champions.
They got, and here's kind of what happens. They got cover story on Wired. They got stories in Newsweek, Time, every major publication, USA Today.
Yep.
And that's great PR. If you're a PR person, they know they're high-fiving like crazy.
Oh,
those
yeah.
are all like massive scores.
I saw it on the web pages of practically every newspaper today. All the news organizations have.
Right. Open
it's the Halo release. Mm-hmm. Gamers are going wild tonight at midnight.
And there's something that's Slater's crazy day. About that. You know, like Robert Ashley, Bob Beto, who's probably going to join us next week.
Yay.
You know, is pointing out that he, from like CNET, you know, he's getting these, what he described as weird emails where it's like offering up the entire editorial staff to any, you know, reporter or whatever who wants to say, have any kind of quote about the game and everything. Mm-hmm. And it's like, there's just this massive push because what happens is, you know, you say to Time or whatever, like, everyone wants, you know, they pitch the story to him. You should cover this. This is the biggest thing ever. Mm-hmm. And it's like you're creating, I mean, and it was. I'm not saying this makes it, but it creates this feedback loop where it becomes big thing that it's supposed
it
to
totally
be by.
It totally feeds on itself.
And then, you know, we're like, well, shit, everyone, this game's everywhere. I mean, this is the biggest phenomenon of the year. We better cover it. And then everyone that jumps in and does that, it helps the snowball accumulate.
Right.
Until at the end, you're like, I mean, you know, to the end when someone out there, no offense to the people involved in the making of it, but there's someone excited that about to see a video of some dudes opening the box.
The fetishist video of opening
it. Then you get to that point, and shit, yeah, like then you're like, oh, well, this better be some damn potent shit.
Yeah.
If it's,
right. I mean,
I mentioned talking it up like this, you damn better well get me high on this load.
Right. Right. I mean,
talking about this shit being Jamaican, my
this
ass.
Is skunk weed.
So Halo Red or Halo Green?
Yeah, I mean right, that specific one point. You know, on my blog today, I mentioned that I pointed out that in a semi disparaging way that our good friends here at 1UP had posted a video showing them opening the box, and I was like, really?
Right.
And I know that Sean, Elliot, you here were talking to them today. And,
yeah. I didn't want Damien, you know, to think
no, I'm
that,
not
like,
dissing anybody there for doing it, but there is a little bit of a danger of that, yeah, you are, or we are contributing to the hype ourselves. We're making the story. It's exactly what
exactly.
you're saying.
And you put yourself into that position. I mean, and all. I mean,
on the other hand, I sent that link to my nephew who's 16 years old.
He probably went
crazy. Didn't say anything. I just said, "Hey, Josh, check this out," and he loved it.
I've had the same thing. Like Robert, I was asking Robert was playing the game, and I was like, you know, what do you think of it? And he's like, I like it, but you got to keep in mind that it's made for 12 to 17 year old boys. And if you keep that in mind, like you can. Appreciate
that
it for what it is. No, the game. I mean,
the game.
He's reading.
he had a specific age range for the opening the box video.
But, no, but yeah, you could see. I mean, imagine. Yeah, that would have been a fantastic thing to watch if I were that age. So you know, nothing against them. But I think you know we're a little older, and for us, we just see nothing but consumer porn. And
Still, since we're never going to really be able to do it, I want to say what our idea was, though.
Okay.
Since we can't really do
Spit it.
But we were talking about making a parody of the video that is on Game Videos right now, where, you know, we get some piece of shit PC game, you know, Zoo Tycoon.
Like
the fifth Zoo Tycoon expansion. Darren comes running in with the box, and we have the 1UP video crew here. Darren going, guys, let's hear.
Play the the 2001 Monolith music. I forget what the name of that piece is.
What
yeah.
Sure, right. The 2001 music or some Wagner or something.
Right.
As we get out Vangelis, that's what it was.
Yeah, as we get out the X-Acto knife and open it up and all.
It's here!
Just be careful when you touch it. I mean, it's an important piece of history and culture, so handle it like that.
I'm going to slip that shit into a Mylar bag afterwards.
So I think a few of us have Halo 3. We're going to play it. I'm going to play it tonight.
And
I'm looking forward to it.
See, tell me later.
That this isn't the sort of thing that contributes to your It works the opposite way. Basically, okay. It makes it harder for you to enjoy the game going in because of the expectation set.
Yeah.
So in the USA Today story, which is ridiculous on many counts, we have it's Peter Molyneux, right?
Yeah. Molyneux.
Yeah. You or Nyo is what I know. Okay, so and he
Nye.
Peter Molyneux. Peter. so he says, Halo delivers it in a way that more than ever before is emotionally engaging. In our industry, Halo represents pretty much the top of the game of what we're able to do with our dramatic content. So there you're like, I really think it's like, that's Peter asking for 6 more months of development time for Fable 2. But beyond that, I mean, like, this is, no, Peter, really? You are saying that
I was about to
this
say,
is the top of the fucking form in dramatic content? It might be the top of the form in shooting some purple fucking Goomba entertainment.
I think he had Satan's pitchfork in his back as he spoke that line.
I don't know. Maybe he believes it. I don't know.
For me, like,
it's probably like a
Halo
1
had, like, a cool twist. And I was like, oh, that was cool. That was neat. And then Halo 2 was just a dramatic narrative disaster.
Well, you didn't like Little Shop of Horrors, Audrey 2?
Well, whatever on that.
Yeah, I mean, there's a lot of great things about the Halo franchise, but I think touting the story
or its dramatic.
I don't know about that.
So
the music,
it's got good action. The deployables are kind of cool in this thing, but I mean, the story is not what I'm playing this for.
Yeah, I mean,
And highlighting this is that we're not, you know, saying that. Hey, maybe that statement right there does hold true for Halo 3. I don't know.
We do not know yet.
But he's not making that claim for Halo 3. He's making it for the series.
For the series.
Yeah, should have started earlier in that he says Halo, as in the series, does what a truly good book or film or TV show does. And it does, and it delivers in a way that's more emotionally engaging than ever before.
You know, this is just my experience with the people I know and myself, but the people I know who are like hardcore Halo fanboys, and this includes my nephew, they're fanboys not because of the universe. They're fanboys because of the multiplayer.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah.
So,
and yet we're told, though, that most of the people play the game for the single player. And then that, you know, the emphasis on the reviews should be on the campaign and this and that. And that's what everyone talks about in stories like this, like the USA Today one, where, again, the guy says that it's, you know, that the game's in the epic tradition that gave us the Iliad, the Odyssey, and it's being reawakened.
Well, this is mainstream media, and that's like not, you know, this is where the marketing machine really works.
Yeah.
Because you don't read articles about the Half-Life universe.
Let's get this straight. I would not make these kind of claims for Half-Life.
Nope.
You know, I'm not going to say that this shit is as good as, you know, some of my favorite, you know, works of literature or anything, because on the dramatic form, I don't really think it is.
Right.
But when compared with other games and what's the range of experiences available attempting to do it, I think it's fucking phenomenal.
Yep.
Yeah.
But I'm not going to say that about Half-Life. Like, why the – like, you got to get out of here, dude. You're trying to tell me this shit about Halo, at least with Halo 1 and Halo 2.
Okay, and then the purple plant comes out and like
– Exactly. Well,
I mean, that's just some
– Feed me, Seymour.
Like, you got to be – I don't know.
Finish the last level, so it just stopped.
Awesome.
Yeah, and it's for the – and we asked, like, why are – it's not that I'm a hater, but for what reasons do you say that you like Halo – but not love it? And these are some of the reasons, you know.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Everything I described about the way that the characterization, the variety, and all these other things are at play, you know, in the Half-Life games, they're not there in Halo 1 and 2.
Right.
And it's just that sense of a movie. Here's a movie. I mean, now you're an arbiter, whatever. It's like, dude, I'm the same guy, but now I can turn invisible. My hand might be a little different. I mean, that's really...
A lot of it for me in the why I don't go gaga over it is, my personal opinion, is the repetitiveness of the environments. I never feel I don't have any, like, strong sense, even between the two games. Mm-hmm. Like, when I think of Halo, just... You know, I just think like purple and green.
Right.
It's, you know? Yeah.
That's why I said that the Pac-Man analogy. For me, it is very much a shooter version of a Pac-Man maze. There's no place. There's no sense that these are locations that exist anywhere. There's no rhyme or reason to anything. When they take you, it's supposed to be these the pinnacle of their game. You know, they let's raise the stakes and say now, you know,
I'm going to Earth.
Yeah, it's not just some like random corridor in a spaceship. This is your planet, and then you go to Earth. You're like, what the fuck is this?
Nothing like Earth.
Yeah, dude, this is what is this supposed to be? Like,
what part of Africa?
Now
is
you're
this?
In corridors on Earth.
Yeah,
yeah. Now we're hating on it.
FW Radio hated on Halo 3. Fuckers.
So what we're saying though,
compare it to like
we're saying we like the shooting, we like the combat.
Right.
That's what I'm saying.
I like the combat too.
It feels great.
I like
to move around,
the vehicles
the guns,
I like,
and drive the vehicles. And and that is it for the single player game. That is all for me. And I'm being completely honest. That is all there is to that game. And it does it well. And that can be fine. Like I think in this, Gears of War is very similar for me in that respect. And I think it's a fun game. And for that, the same reason I like Halo, I like to play it and I want to play it. That that alone is enough. But when you start coming in with these grandiose statements and all these other claims.
Well, this is my whole problem. Right. And that's my problem. And that's what I said on my blog. Is that I like the franchise, but I don't get it. I don't get why this one gets all the love. When I don't see it as being so phenomenally superior
what's
to other franchises.
Dude, Bioshock came out
that's exactly
year.
What I was just about to
there
say.
There you go, Bioshock.
It has a more compelling story.
Right.
And it does?
I mean,
that sells a time
in. Because I'm saying for Halo. I mean, maybe Halo 3's story is just some kick-ass shit. I know Shu did say that there wasn't a single wow moment or something like that in the game.
You know what? I'm just I've only played
it. Sounds to me like bad, considering that Half-Life 2 Episode 2 is nothing but wow moment after the other.
I've only played a little bit. I didn't have that much time this weekend. I'm only maybe like an hour, two or 3 hours into Halo 3. Mm-hmm. And this is a totally subjective test, but I use Amy, my wife. Mm-hmm. So she watched me play this game, and like she also watched me play a lot of Bioshock, and she was loving watching Bioshock, and she actually wanted to like help out and play it. Mm-hmm. With Halo 3, she's like, inside of 10 minutes, she's like, this is stupid. She was like, didn't care,
put that on the box. There you have it. Amy didn't like it.
Yeah, I know.
By that standard, though, I don't want to say Amy's like my cat, but my cat will watch America's Funniest Home Videos.
Oh shit! There
it
we
won't
go.
Watch the news or anything else. No, but it will because. Because there's other, you know, there's stuff going on in there that
where
you can.
Where I was going, okay. So now my cat. No, but I was. Where I was going with this is, I mean, if you're going to call a game, you know, it's a game of epic proportions. Mm-hmm. You got to at least back it up and be able to like cater to somebody besides the 12 to 17 year old market.
Mm-hmm. It doesn't, But I mean, on that, I don't want to go there because I don't even think it has to. I don't want to provide any prescription for Halo at all because it doesn't need to do a goddamn thing. It is like better than. Any game marketer or game developer's wildest expectations. Sure. So everyone involved has reason to. They're a damn success, you know.
Right.
They did something.
I will also say that Bungie has made great game after great game.
Yeah.
The Marathon series, still my favorite FPS series of all time.
The Myth.
Myth, some of the best real-time strategy games ever. And I would also say one of, if not the best stories in a real-time strategy series ever, the Myth games.
Those
so
are great.
Bungie is totally capable of telling a story too. Mm-hmm. So
I'm just
trying to go out of my way here, even though we're going to get it anyway, to try to say we are not Halo haters.
No, I'm actually playing the game. I'm enjoying it. I'm just all I was saying is
we are protesting too much.
We're very used to this in music and stuff because it's just been the state in every other format. I mean, everything. It's like it's never the best-selling stuff is never the very best stuff. Period.
Yep.
You could show me a few exceptions to that rule.
Uh-huh.
You know?
Yeah, right.
But we don't even argue with it. It's like, oh yeah, like so and so, like Kevin Federline sold more albums this year than Aesop Rock or whatever. It's like,
you
don't even bitch about it because you're so used to that being the case. But the difference with games though is that whereas it might cost you a lot less to make an Aesop Rock album than Federline because you're not paying for ex-producers, you're not paying for the marketing muscle of this major, you know, I don't know what he's on, but like Warner or something like that, you know. But with games, if you're going to make a game that competes with this, you do have to spend that much money. So it is more of like a scenario where I see something that's truly good and I know that a lot of money was spent on it. In other words, it was a big risk. You know, I want to see them do as well. And I'm speaking of Bioshock here, you know, and it did. That was great. It was wonderful to see that Bioshock did well.
Hell yeah.
Because that would have, I mean, do we ever want another one of these cases, you know, in our long list of games where you're like, oh God, that was one of the best games ever. No one played it.
Right. You know? No, we don't.
Hate that.
Right. And this release today of Halo is, you know, of Halo 3 is an event. You know, it's a mainstream media event. Which sort of brings out, by its nature, the kind of cynical hardcore gamer that's how we, thing in us.
Right, we're that way about everything, though. If there's an event for a new kind of like Pepsi or something, you know, or like a new like a new TV show, and we'd be the
same haters.
Way. Yeah. Anytime someone, we live in an environment that's saturated with pitch people.
Yeah.
And then when we see the pitch people get to a fever pitch, then we just say,
right, we don't like to be
chill the fuck out, Corky.
Speaking of which, we got the in our Halo boxes that we got today. We also got the Halo Media Kit. Which came in a ridiculous, it was like in the same metal case as the limited edition box with all sorts of bullshit in here. They were like, it was like two separate manuals. They're like media guides on, you know.
The story thus far.
You got to point out, this is what you're, so if you did watch that video, the opening of video.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, this was
this
in there.
This is what you're missing, right? What Jeff's about to read.
Yeah, so this.
If you were coveting it.
Yeah, so there's like a
fingers shouldn't be so like this, hot anymore.
I don't know, 12-page little guide here called the
Halo, the phenomenon in the franchise.
So this and so there's page after page of bullshit, but I'm gonna read you, I'm gonna read you this one, Halo Nation. Okay.
In addition to an outspoken, passionate, and fanatical following by gamers, Halo has also culled a deeply dedicated celebrity following, made up of notables from leading men, Hollywood starlets, to chart-topping musicians. John Mayer, Ryan Phillip, Jack Black, Justin Timberlake, Aisha Tyler.
Is that how you say her name? Aisha?
Who are you asking?
Aisha? you know? Sounds not our good, demographic. Yeah.
And many more have all been known to unwind by playing Halo and have expressed their deep passion for the franchise.
This is like, dude, like, whatever the... Grandpa Witherspoon uses Preparation H.
Yeah, so really. Like, who gives a fuck?
Your ass all is right, on fire. That's the way to, that's the way to right. cool it
In
down.
The sports arena, Halo has established itself as the game off the field. The practice-free Tuesdays in the NFL give athletes such as Matt Leinart, Larry Johnson, and Carson Palmer a chance to kick back with teammates and test their skills in a different type of competition. In addition to Mayer and Timberlake, the music world has embraced the Halo franchise with energy and enthusiasm.
And zest.
Bands such as Linkin Park, Breaking Benjamin, Incubus, Beastie Boys, Cartel, Good Charlotte, Snoop Dogg, and My Chemical Romance are proudly part of the Halo Nation.
Jeff, why do you like Halo so much? Next time someone asks you, you'd be like...
Because Good Charlotte likes it.
Yo. Park play that shit?
I don't even know who the hell that is. Good Charlotte. All right.
While traveling from city to city on their tour bus, band members have been known to battle each other in Halo to pass the time.
What the fuck ever? Okay, then, then they've got some celebrity
quotes. They've been known to do lines, too.
Yeah, right. They've been known to pick their nose. Do I have to do that now, too?
They've been known to hook up an occasional...
because like, the Beastie Boys sit in the bus picking their nose? All right. So Chris Brown, R&B superstar... His quote,
R&B.
his quote is, here's his quote. Halo 1 and 2 already are great games. I can't wait for Halo 3. Thanks. Chris. That's a good quote.
It's deep.
It's hot. It's insightful.
John Heder from Napoleon Dynamite.
Oh.
We all love him.
Yes.
I'm a huge Halo fan. I'm really into Xbox Live and being able to play with friends. I'm excited for the new one and to see what new weapons they have. Okay.
Gee.
Matt Leinart, I don't know if it's Leinart, he's the QB for the Arizona Cardinals. I'm a diehard video game freak, and Halo is the most addicting game I've ever played. Okay, he's a quarterback, so I'm not going to make fun of him.
Gustav Tremendous says,
hey guys, I'm about to go heavy weapons. Can you spare me an Uber charge?
Thank you for interjecting. One last quote from Dane Cook.
Comedian,
which I'm putting in quotes.
Yeah. That's some funny shit.
Using that term loosely.
Yeah. It's like an arcade classic. It's fun
to play. It is, Pac-Man.
It's fun to play over and over again. It's a good release of stress. Get your mind off things for 9 straight hours.
That's hot, so, like a fucking 5-word sentence thing right now to get like mind off a good
row. You know what? The sad thing is that they fucking printed this page.
But they sent it to
that's about as funny
press.
As he is.
And they sent it to us as if we'll go, whoa.
It's not made for us, though. It's in case you can convince, like, you know, for Rolling Stone, in case you can get Variety to review it. Or,
okay,
you know,
so let's say I'm some fat old fuck who works on some newspaper. I got a story due in like 8 hours. And like, hey, Green, where's the Halo 3 story? Well, we need it. All the kids are buying it today. We need a story. Let's go.
Yeah, exactly.
Press. We need some copy. And I'm sitting at my desk, and I roll in a sheet of paper into my newspaper. I put on my little scoop hat. I'm like, oh, shit, I don't know shit about Halo. So I, like, open this book, and I'm like, oh, Halo 3, whose fans include Chris Brown, R&B superstar.
I mean, what the fuck?
God. Yeah. So this is, in short, this is why we get annoyed by it. By
someone
the Halo hype.
Should make a YTMND of that. This is an example. That was a good rant.
Yeah, we should get one of those for every game. I want to see one of those for like the next.
I want to see which celebrities play every single game from now on.
World War II, you know, hex-based game.
People do it, though. People do it. You know how it is. Even in enthusiast press, it's like you get like press materials. You look around and you see the exact same thing. You're like, oh yeah, I remember reading that. Like the points.
Oh,
the
sure.
Points are
oh,
the same. Yeah. And in that one classic example was PlayStation Extreme 2 magazine had a cover story for the Transformers game. It wasn't the one connected to the movie, but the old PS2 Xbox one. And I'm reading this thing. I'm like, holy shit, if this doesn't sound familiar. And then I dig out on like my junk drawer, my press releases, and I pull out Transformers. There's like 600 words pasted in, but not even altered. Not a fucking word changed. Like, and that was like the beginning of the story. I was like, wow. Uh-huh. So that's a classic example. Yeah. Most cases...
Right. To all budding journals out there, Control C and Control V are your friends.
All you need. The paychecks would come rolling in.
And I took scans of it and I showed some people. Yeah. We never blogged it or anything, though. Yeah. But that was
step incredible. One, bookmark Wikipedia. Step two, learn the Control C key.
Believe.
Yeah. Do we have anything else?
Finish the podcast.
Stop this crap.
We only talked about shooters this time.
We'll have to talk. We left the other genres for a while.
It's shooterific at this time of year.
I didn't get around to talking about Fortress Forever or some of the many.
I will be talking about the Neverwinter Nights 2 expansion when I get my new build. So I'll be talking about that at some point for you D&D fans out there. You devil worshippers. Any other games that we know coming up? That we're going to talk about that we want
I
to
saw
play.
Ryan has Blazing Angels. Is that what's called? A
Blazing Angels 2?
Yeah, I kind of want to play that.
I kind of want to check that out too. I'm kind of curious.
Was that one of them flight sims?
No.
It's an arcade-y kind of flight game.
Okay.
Did I just say flighter? Yeah, whatever.
flighter.
That's actually pretty
new genre. Mm-hmm. What about you, Sean? What are you looking forward to?
I don't know.
Isn't Quake Wars coming out next week?
Quake Wars is coming
out. Yeah, I just next got week? A retail next copy week? October today 2nd, because it came out in Europe, I think.
Yeah.
I need to get a new PC.
Dude, we have to play that this week.
Embarrassment of riches. Damn it.
We do have a lot. And
Crisis.
What else was there to talk
Crisis
about?
Beta. Anyone Crisis. Else get on?
Yeah.
I'm not in the beta yet. I got on the Hellgate beta.
We're supposed to talk about... About having Chavat Yearly on this week, recording a special podcast.
Something like that.
So, maybe if you're listening, you might get an extra one this week if we have time. It's
or
rough.
We gotta figure that out, logistics.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
What, you guys are doing a special secret one?
No, we could all do it. We just do another one. We just tape early
an event
be part of it.
Well, there's an event later this week with happening on the USS Hornet, right?
Oh, that thing.
That has nothing to do with this other than the fact that he's in country. He's
well, that's what I figured he's there for, so.
Yeah.
Oh, okay. Yeah, they're having some event on some battleship or something out there, right? I don't know what that's about. I don't know why they have to have it on a ship.
Hotel room not good enough.
Maybe Dane Cook will be there.
I hope he's there so I can punch him in the fucking head.
Hey.
Oh my.
How that guy has a career just annoys me.
Yeah, I just figure we're not the demographic for Dane Cook.
I don't know.
What, I have a pulse?
Yeah, and I think we're over the age limit for Dane Cook.
Really?
There's a certain level at which it's just...
Well, you see those commercials for Good Luck Chuck.
Oh, God.
And all it is just like people get hit in a crotch in 12 different ways, and then it's over.
That's like people that just joke about farts and dicks the whole time.
Yeah, who does that?
Wait, isn't that what we do?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's all we are.
One of my anecdotes that here's my chance to spill was that in... speaking of dicks...
you don't hear that transition on every podcast.
In Team Fortress 2, like the voiceover IP has got this really like tinny quality to it. And then, you know, I was babbling and then someone's like my friend Rory was like, dude, you sound like you're in a tunnel full of dicks. And then it didn't even make any sense. But then, like, so then I was, like, trying to cultivate it and, like, singing, like, if you like tunnels and you dig dicks, then you will love the tunnel full of dicks. And, like, singing that all in the... In
wow.
The,
well, that's true. I mean... You see, now there's a YMBB sample. Wow.
But it was good. It was, like, that's pretty much what it sounded like. The other thing, before we forget, we had... I was gone last week to respond, but we had that mega thread on 1UP where all these people wrote in. Tell us their thoughts on the show. I don't know if you talked about it.
Oh, right.
But one element that we saw in there is that we have, and also from, you know, PMs and other things we get from listeners, that we have seemingly quite a few listeners throughout Europe, in New Zealand, Australia.
Uh-huh.
And just wanted to say, hey, thanks for listening.
Yeah, so bonjour.
G'day.
G'day.
Bienvenue.
Willkommen.
No, welcome.
Willkommen, dein Germans.
And hey, how you doing?
Yeah.
And the other thing, like, don't be afraid about posting, on our forums, even, you know, if you're concerned about the quality of your English. Like, we're not going to clown you. Like, someone has said they were afraid. You know, I'm not going to clown you for speaking multiple languages.
Yeah, we won't do that.
Like, no, you've got something on all of us, and it doesn't matter how shitty your English is. If it's not your first language, like, let her rip, you know?
Yeah, we barely speak English, and we can't speak anything else.
I was going to say, like, their English is probably better than my German or something.
Yeah, right. We'll only make fun of you behind your back. Yeah. We'll print out your email and then read it to the
staff.
There
was the classic, though, the Belgian, no, it's from the Netherlands, Giuseppe Contelli. And he used to do the what ifs, and he would always send them in. He still sends them in like a maniac to EGM.
Yeah.
But the whole time I worked there, he sent these things in, and at Game Now when that magazine was around. Mm-hmm. And they're just like the most crackpot things you've ever seen. They don't make any goddamn sense at all. Like,
because he was Belgian?
And they would always. Part of it, there was a few like language things that made it funnier because it would always be what if X did. Mm-hmm. So, like, for example, like, what if the Mario Kart did run over the Blast Corps car, and that did become like something from a rare game, you know, give me something here, Conker's fucking Squirrel Treehouse or something, you know. But that's the thing. I mean, that sounds absurd. They never make any sense at all. It was just a matter of like name checking like a couple rare games and then like maybe a Square game or something. But it would always have that rad did in it. So there was a big era when I'd go around with like Miguel Lopez and shit, and it would be like, and every time you just look at someone and be like, so what if, what was the classic one? Oh, yeah. What if Tommy Vercetti did fly the dodo into the SimCity building, and Dr. B did rescue, I fucked up. No, and Virtua Cop did rescue Dr. B from the stairwell. There we go.
This is why people hate Americans, Sean.
That shit was hot.
Yeah, sure.
That was a game. They should make that a game.
Yeah. He would send pictures of himself covered in the magazine or like up in a tree reading it and shit.
What, like naked?
No, but he'd be like laying in a field with a bunch of the magazines on him and stuff.
Okay, absolutely.
It was weird. And he had a thread. He made a thread on the forums, and it was just thousands of pages long. And he just, you know, all day long, he's adding more. I think it's really like a weird form of autism where, you know, like instead of being like a, you know, a human calculator or something, mm-hmm. you know, where you're just constantly performing, sure. you know, various, you know, mathematical problems, you're solving mm-hmm. various mathematical problems in your head all day. He could not shut off the damn what if machine. So all day long, it's just like reshuffling this deck of cards.
That's
which
cool.
is basically probably, square.
Yeah, he might have been the next Isaac Newton.
And he had to share, though. And he would write them in like in you know, pen by hand and draw a little stuff in the margins. And every day EGM for a while would still get an envelope just fat. Just stuff, you know, with international shipping
awesome.
Rates with, yeah. full of these.
You want to hire the guy, don't you? Because there might be one every few thousand.
They gave him a
gold.
Column.
I was going to say, that guy has a job at Marvel Comics now or something.
In Game Now, he did it. They actually put a column of that in there. I don't know how they got it. Because you look at it and you're like, what the hell is this? It was like an inside joke or one of those things where they're like, this magazine ain't going to be around in a while. Let's turn it into Giuseppe Gazzelli's Corner. But then, so Giuseppe, because of that, thought that, like, I mean, it just encouraged his mania.
Uh-huh.
Like, this mm-hmm. is some shit I got going
I'm
here.
Something.
You know? Mm-hmm. And yeah, so then it was like, hey, no more Game Now. Said he gave me a complimentary subscription to EGM. Let's see how they like some what is.
Oh, I see. Oh. Hey, well, if you're listening, Giuseppe, we'll take your stuff too.
Yeah, send us some what ifs.
Give us some what if scenarios.
Yeah. It doesn't even have to be about PC.
What the hell? We got nothing to write about.
Yeah.
We got the same fucking four games over and over.
After I basically.
You mix and match all the shooters. It's the same damn thing.
Having autism.
And being a human fucking what if machine.
We'll see if he could write a better World War II lead than some of these other guys.
Yeah.
Oh. Yeah.
What if a World War II game?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Okay, so are we out?
Yeah, let's get out of
this. Yeah, we're
out. Like a tunnel full of dicks in here.
Tunnel full of dicks.
Going to be singing that the whole
way
home.
That's what you're missing. That was the other shit, too, in Team Fortress of Voice is
because
everyone's always asking for, they called it a Uber charge. Uber. So I would just do that shit, you know, like, all right, I'm about to rush. I'm going to could really use an Uber charge.
An Uber charge?
Yeah, just like mutter that shit nonstop the whole. Because half the time you're playing, it's like every other word I hear is Uber charge or Uber charge if they get it right. It's like, quit talking about the goddamn thing.
I'm finding this game to be just fine without the voice chat.
It's fun with it. It's definitely fun. You know, for the Keith stuff.
You want to take it to the next level, you got to talk.
You want to tell people when you see a spy
for spies,
base,
yeah.
Who he's disguised as. On that sort of thing.
Yeah, good point.
And you need to be able to tell. It's so rapid. If you're playing to win, and if you have the equivalent of a leader, and you'd be like, you know, we need these classes back at this point of the map, or we could use this up front, or I'm noticing that this is what, you know, say you sneak in their back base as a spy, you're like, this is what their defensive setup looks like. I'm just kind of doing surveillance. Mm-hmm. Be prepared for it. Pick.
But are you doing any of that, or are you just singing Tunnel Full of Dicks?
I'm doing both. I'm sticking Tunnel Full of Dicks, and
he's ordering up his Uber.
Yeah,
Uber in a Tunnel Full of Dicks.
Okay, well,
it does sound like that though. Listen to it. It sounds like
a Tunnel Full of Dicks. I don't know what that sounds like.
It makes it.
It's like the sound of one hand clapping.
That's like saying this tastes like shit. Sorry, I don't know what that tastes like. I'm not with you there.
That's exactly the point. Yeah, you don't know what shit tastes like.
You assume it tastes like something.
Whatever Tunnel Full of Dicks sounds like, it doesn't sound like the way you want to sound when you're talking to of all possible options.
Okay, that's fair.
Know
fair
that. Enough.
All right.
Bad acoustics in a tunnel.
Okay, we're off. We're out. We will be
back.
Wait,
there's more on that.
Yeah.
Oh, Jesus. Eat this dead horse.
Well, all
you
right.
Remember the Chris Rock skit where he's talking about how, like, girls will dance to any club hit?
Yeah.
They will dance to any old club hit, no matter how nasty the lyrics are. And he's like, you know, slap him with a dick, slap him with a dick, slap him with a dick. And he's like, and the girls are like on the stage, like, until you say, like, do you know what you're listening to? And they're like, hey, he's not talking about me. And then, but so we were, of course, doing that. Like, tunnel full of dick, tunnel full of dick, tunnel full of dick.
Okay. Yeah. There's your meme for this week. There's your GFW
meme.
Tunnel full of dicks.
You needed a new fupa, and there you go.
Okay.
The new fupa.
Okay, if someone could come up with a nice Tunnel Full of Dicks song for us.
Oh, no. Wow. Why do you put it out there? I'm going to have, like, so many MP3s stacked up on the...
you know, you realize where all this came from? This was a transition from Dane Cook Isn't Funny.
Oh, man.
He's so immature.
That he doesn't have enough dick and fart jokes. It is fucking...
Yeah. Oh, well. Ah, we're fucking hypocrites.
Yeah, we can be hypocrites.
Okay. She made me laugh. I'm easily amused.
We'll see you next week.
And we out.
Bye.
We out.